A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant at the G, Joe and George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah!
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at NRG Center for the 2024 Texas Trophy Hunters Extravaganza. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Friday. Got to get down on Friday from the Hunters Extravaganza. Texas Trophy Hunters Association at NRG Center. We're going to be here all afternoon. Come by and say hi on your way into the big showroom, which is right by us. Andre Johnson's getting his gold jacket tomorrow. We're walking down memory lane with him. So many great memories. I love any call that features Gus Johnson, who used to be an NFL broadcaster for CBS, Joe. And here is Andre Johnson making a 65-yard catch against the Tennessee Titans back in 2008.
Play action, shot, throwing down the field. Johnson got it! Andre Johnson down inside the 25! And he's popping his collar. Big play for the Houston Texans. And they're at striking distance.
We spoke to Jeff Fisher yesterday and asked him, how does Andre Johnson, a guy who you know is going to get a lot of footballs thrown to him, how does he keep getting open? Nice double move right there.
That's a gain of 65 yards.
Gus Johnson makes everything better. Popping his collar!
He's just one of those guys, like, if there's a college football game and he's on the call, you know something crazy is going to happen. It was like that in the NFL, too. We do need him back in the NFL. That'd be great.
I think there's a lot of people that don't like him on football games. They believe that he is better for basketball, for March Madness. I disagree with them. But based off of looking at some of the old highlights of Andre Johnson, it seems like Gus Johnson was regularly on the call of Texans games back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, listen, you'd rather have Gus Johnson on the call than, no offense, because he is a Syracuse guy after all, but like, what you typically end up with, which is Andrew Catalan and Adam Archuleta. You know, you want somebody with a little extra gravitas. Like, I got excited for the one game the Texans had last year with Kevin Harlan on the call. He's my favorite broadcaster. I forget which game it was, but yeah, the Texans are going to get some higher profile announcers this year.
They will, and Andre will be talked about a lot this season. I would imagine with the Hall of Fame, him getting in this year, and you know, one of the best parts about the timing of this too. Is it just gets the excitement for football season, like, really here. You have your first Hall of Famer as a franchise, and now you go into a season where you have more expectations than this franchise has probably ever had. I don't know.
Yes. 2012, there were expectations, but the Patriots loomed. And maybe this is me looking at the Patriots relative to the two-time defending champion Kansas City Chiefs and being a little bit biased there. But I remember I did not take the Texans of 2011 going into 2012 seriously, because I felt like with Matt Schaub there was a ceiling, where with CJ Stroud I do not know what that ceiling is. There will definitely be a level that he maxes out at. All players do, even Patrick Mahomes.
But like, in your mind, you can think of CJ Stroud dueling with Patrick Mahomes in a playoff game.
Yes.
And like, how that could work. The idea of Matt Schaub dueling with Tom Brady in a playoff game would have seemed far-fetched.
It seemed like he would have lost 8 to 9 times out of 10. Where with Stroud, I honestly don't know the answer. And I mean, for Stroud, it might be just like with Josh Allen, where he's losing the majority of the games that he's had against Patrick Mahomes. But you got that little extra quality of unknown because of what you saw from C.J. Stroud last year.
Yeah, but the Andre Howitz, watching them, I've just been going through YouTube channels and seeing them. First of all, it's very funny to see just like the definition of television and how much it's changed, because some of them are very grainy compared to what they were. He's just such a dominant player. And like, this is one where, too, he wasn't the fastest guy on the field, but like, you get him in open space and he could move.
Well, the interesting thing was, like, you're right. He never looked fast, but go back and watch his highlights and look at how many times he's wide open downfield. And part of it was because of the subtle movements that he was able to do. But there are comparisons made between he and Nico Collins all the time.
Andre was always listed at 6'3". Andre's 6'2". Like, Andre's not as tall as you would think. I know what he was listed as, but I having seen Andre in person, it's not like I thought he's small, but...
Paul out here sizing up Andre Johnson.
Well, I mean, you look at a guy relative to their height, and sometimes heights are fudged, and that's not to say Andre was short by or any means, but I never felt Andre Johnson looked as big as he played. Like, some of these players, especially at wide receiver, are a lot bigger than they play. One guy who comes to mind, I don't know if anyone remembers him, but he played for the Dolphins way back in the day, Chris Chambers, who apparently was 5'11". But Chris Chambers could essentially fly out there, and it felt like he was a lot bigger than he actually was. And Johnson was that. But the speed that he's able to get by people with, there's something deceptive about it where it never looked like he was running full speed, but you can count. It'll take you multiple hands. Like probably like four to five hands to count all the times that he just ran by an entire defense and was wide open downfield.
And that's where I wonder if with getting him into the Hall of Fame is like he didn't have the touchdowns like you mentioned. He also just didn't have some of that explosiveness. Like just when you watch it, he was always open, but like it wasn't like when you would watch Megatron or anything like that. And that probably hurt him too. I mean, who knows? Maybe McClain just didn't give him the best rah-rah speech. At the time, I'm sure he did a great job because he got him in eventually. But it is funny. It's just the dumbest way they put people in the Hall of Fame. I don't even know how baseball works or basketball works.
Well, baseball there's a ballot. Dumb. Baseball, there's a ballot, but there's a weird element where it seems like in the past, at least, some guys wouldn't vote people in right away because they felt like they needed to wait.
Yeah, so dumb.
That Ken Griffey Jr. was not a unanimous Hall of Famer. His first ballot is nuts. I think it's crazy that Mariano Rivera was. Mm-hmm. Nothing against Rivera. Rivera's a Hall of Famer, but like, who had the better career? Ken Griffey Jr. And Ken Griffey Jr. was hurt half of it. Rivera has some amazing postseason moments, but I think what you should remember Mariano Rivera for more is 2004 when the Yankees were up 3-0 and blew a 3-0 series lead.
I think that's a valid point.
He blew 2 games back-to-back.
If it wasn't for Mario Rivera, we might still have curses in baseball. You never know.
That's true.
So thank you, Mario.
That's true. Curt Schilling might not have gone off the deep end either.
I don't think so. I think he was going to go off the deep end no matter what happened.
Hmm.
The bloody sock helped a little bit, I'd imagine, for inflate his ego. But, I think Curt Schilling is going off the deep end no matter what.
So we're remembering Andre Johnson. There's some more highlights that we have to get to, and I'm going to ask to pull one right now, Sean. If we could play his walk-off touchdown against the Jacksonville Jaguars, that would be great.
A field goal or a score of any time wins it. Double three to Jackson. Andre Johnson!
I was at that game.
The veteran receiver that has been a part of this team for his entire career has stuck around through thick and thin when the chips were down in the fourth quarter. In overtime, when the game has been on the line, time and again, they have looked for him.
I stepped on the color commentary there. But that was at a stretch during the 2012 season where the Texans were starting to look gassed. They had only one loss at this moment in time. And I forget if this was the week after they had played the Lions on Thanksgiving and won that game in overtime, but they were winning some nail biters. And in that game, Johnson had 14 catches for 273 yards, and that catch on a bubble screen, which he took to the house to end that game against the Jaguars. And you could tell, they were gassed. Like, I think it was towards the very end of overtime there was actually a chance that it might end in a tie. And he took that one to the house. Somebody texted in that's their favorite memory of Andre Johnson because they were there. And, it was really loud there. So he's had a bunch of really good games. I'm bummed out for him that he never had a real big-time playoff moment in a victory. Because he had a couple of good games. Like 2011 when they lost in the divisional round to the Ravens, he had 8 for 111. But that game... because of Jacoby Jones, the late Jacoby Jones muffing the punt inside the 10, and because T.J. Yates was doing everything he could to throw interceptions in that game, they end up losing that one. And then he had 8 for 95 against the Patriots, and we played a highlight from that earlier in the week of Daniel Manning, where the first play of that game, it looks like the Texans actually might challenge them after they got smoked in the Letterman jacket game on Monday night earlier that year, same year as this Jaguars touchdown that he scored. And then the rest of the game, though, like they were closer than they were in the regular season, but it never really seemed like they were actually going to get it done.
Yeah, it sucks. Like when you have these great players who and they do nothing wrong, because it's not like a quarterback where a quarterback can control so much of that. But because Andre just didn't have, and the franchise just didn't have that playoff success, that does suck. Like it's just it's a bummer that you have this all time great player with. It's not a lot to show for it in a lot of ways, and in terms of like the real success, the stuff that it's not his fault that he didn't achieve, because what he could do on the field, he was incredible at. He did it, didn't matter who his quarterback was, he had great success all the time, and then just they didn't have the team success that goes with it. And you know, that's why it's kind of nice for a guy like him. I'm sure there's some, I don't know if it's like jealousy or envy. But it's good that he's still very active and around the team, and he's so involved
in
the organization.
They screwed it up at the end. They really did. Bill O'Brien, who was actually right, told him that he was maybe going to catch 40 passes for the Texans after his last year, which was 2014. That's an insulting thing to say to somebody who is, at that moment in time, the player's best the franchise's best ever player. Like, the way that he did it could have been done differently. And O'Brien, I think, was trying to pride himself on being honest. And look, he ended up being right. Like, Andre had 40 catches with the Colts the next season. Bill O'Brien was trying to install something new, blah, 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 blah. And he was still young. We didn't really know that much about Bill O'Brien then, if we're trying to be fair in any way to O'Brien. I know a lot of people listening are probably like, well, you should never be fair to Bill O'Brien. The way he handled that was horrible. So the fact that he's back, and he's also back after basically saying the Jack Easterby stuff was an absolute joke. It's great, because there was a moment in time where it looked like sort of the same way that the Lions and Calvin Johnson went their own separate ways. Like that, I mean, imagine being a Lions fan and you essentially for 10 years had your best ever players in a sort of like, what's it called?
Purgatory?
No, not purgatory. It's basically when you're not on speaking. Estranged. Like they were estranged from their two best players. And the Texans were with that with Andre Johnson because of Jack Easterby and Bill O'Brien for the better part of, I would say, the last 10 years.
I mean, I remember we talked about Deshaun recently, and like we brought up about what it was first like before all the cases and everything started dropping. I remember Andre put a photo up on Instagram. I think it was, I can't remember if it was just him or it was him and Deshaun at a Rockets game. And he just called out the Texans for the way they were handling the Deshaun Watson situation when Caserio got hired here. I mean, really, the whole alumni base, like they have, like, you know, Travis Johnson and all these guys who they wear the red jackets. I can't remember what they're called, but the ambassadors when they're at these games. And that started to dwindle so fast. And that was because Andre was really the guy who was like, I don't really know about being part of this. You think back to the mistakes they made with J.J. Watt at the end of that tenure. Like, that didn't end super well. And it's just good these guys are back, because you mentioned the Lions. I think the Kevin Garnett, too. The fact that KG has his number retired in Boston, but he doesn't have it retired in Minnesota because he will not go back to the organization until they are sold. It's just it's really challenging for your fan base to have such iconic players not be part of it. So I give Caserio and Cal and Hannah, specifically probably Cal and Hannah, a lot of credit for mending these fences and getting rid of Jack and just making sure that when Andre finally got into the Hall of Fame, that he's doing it with positive vibes around the Texans.
He's Joe George. I'm Paul Gallant. We are Gallant and George at the Hunters Extravaganza at NRG Center. More Andre Johnson memories as the show continues. We also take a look back at the few things you need to take away from the Texans' preseason defeat to the Chicago Bears at the Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio. A game that didn't even make it into the fourth quarter. Honestly, it's really soft. You can't finish an NFL game. And maybe a deep steel blue pill for you as well to get you hyped for a season that's right around the corner. It is Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5, 92.5, 97.9 HD2, ESPN Houston on YouTube and twitch.tv/ESPN975 with a camera on remote for the first time. Stick around.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at NRG Center for the 2024 Texas Trophy Hunters Extravaganza.
Yates, plenty of time, and going deep for Johnson. Wide open, got it! Touchdown!
And then on the outside, working on Pac-Man Jones, who was just hurt. No footwork, his eyes were in the wrong place, and Andre Johnson just took advantage of it.
Yeah, Andre Johnson made Pac-Man Jones look very silly right there.
Pac-Man. Another guy who went off the deep end.
Pac-Man Jones, you could never say the man wasn't interesting.
Yeah, to say the least. I'm watching this one right now where he cooked Ed Reed, too. He was in an era where like there was so many great corners and, you know, Darrell Revis, and there's Ed Reed, and these all these guys.
He cooked Ed Reed?
Yeah.
Rewind a little bit on your YouTube.
This might be more here. Matt Schaub here cooked Ed Reed.
Schaub's rolling Whoop. To his left. That was a hell of a throw. Oh, yeah. Reed just played that poorly. He was a little bit too upfield on that one.
It almost like Davis Mills like that throw here.
While we're on that. So, look, preseason game number one, you got to take it all with a grain of salt because for the most part, most of these guys are never going to play again. For the most part. Or if they do play, it's going to be because somebody got hurt. And that would be the case with Davis Mills. Mills looked good last night, and he deserves credit for looking good last night. Pretty crazy to think that this is now his fourth NFL season. I think it's the last year of his rookie contract. If he wants to be the backup quarterback for C.J. Stroud for the rest of time to the point where he's going to earn $50 million like Joe George believes he's capable of making,
yep,
this is a good first way to start it because, I mean, last year they couldn't play him against the Titans because of their offensive line issues. And in this game, I thought Mills showed a mobility that I've never seen from him. It is going up against backups for the Chicago Bears, so everything, again, with a grain of salt, but he had a nice spin move before a throw that he made downfield to Ben Skowronek. He had a roll out to his right where he got a four-yard gain. Mills was the best Houston Texan last night. In fact, there were a couple of drops. Xavier Hutchinson had one early. Skowronek had another drop early. The one-handed catch that he had for 1 yard was cool and all.
Yeah, yes.
I saw there was like a random discourse about like the wide receivers, and I think it's wasted energy to be talking about Xavier Hutchinson and Skowronek, even if they do end up making the roster. But to bring it back to Mills, Mills was really good, and good for him. I'm happy for him.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you don't want to see him this year, but the reality is like we're probably going to. I mean, only a handful of quarterbacks played in every game last season. Like it's just, I think it was 36 quarterbacks started games. Last year, no, that's way wrong. It was like 68 quarterbacks started games last year in the NFL.
Yikes.
So there's so
And Mills
many.
Started none of them.
Yes, and Mills
it was
started
Case
none
Keenum
of them.
For both of those games. The
yeah.
Titans and the Browns on Christmas Eve. Yeah.
I was surprised to see Case last night. I just didn't think that they would throw a 36-year-old quarterback out there in preseason.
Well, you know, you gotta shake the cobwebs off, you know? If you're getting up there in age, like when my dad used to run, The amount of time that he would spend stretching before he would go out on a run was a long time. So if you're Case Keenum and the season is right around the corner, you got to limber up a little bit.
When have you started thinking about that for yourself? Like when are you going to start extending your stretching time? Are you still feeling okay when you go to the gym?
I hope this silence speaks volumes. Just because my disc cracks from time to time when I get up is no reason. For you, Joe George.
I was just asking a question.
For you, Joe. Well, I'm answering the question, aren't I?
I stretch for.
I love how the echo is like making me seem a lot cooler, more scary.
I stretch for quite a bit, Paul. Like
I only stretch before I play a sport. I don't stretch before the gym as much. Every now and then I do, but we are getting to a day where yes, I'm to answer your question seriously without getting angry here. Like I'm a very realistic person. Yeah, it's getting to that point.
But Mills was good last night, and you get to the point where you have to wonder if they'll go do what they did last year again. If we're in that situation where CJ Stroud gets hurt, because what was weird about last year was remember when CJ left a couple games, Davis was the quarterback who would come in because Case wasn't dressed. And then when it came time to start, that's when they went to Case Keenum. I think in a perfect world, like if CJ Stroud were to get hurt, you would want to see Davis Mills, just because, no offense to Case, but like he's a little slower. He's obviously not very mobile. As we talked about with DJ earlier this week, the Titans game was not pretty. They got the win, but like it was not pretty. I mean, when you have to take a quarterback out because he can't throw a Hail Mary, that's tough, even though Davis almost made it worse. But, you know, hopefully last night's good things to come if you need to see Davis Mills this season.
Yeah. I don't – today, August 2nd, 2024, if C.J. Stroud was hurt, I would not be low-key recommending Case Keenum as a starting quarterback. I forget specifically what I said leading up to that Titans game last year when I was doing the show by myself. And Sean, maybe you remember. It's probably a bad sign. This is the worst. I don't remember what I said. But if I'm not mistaken, I remember that week. I think I said a couple of times, like, I think I want to see Case Keenum out there. I think I said it a couple of times. And then they actually put Case Keenum out there. It was a bit surprising. All right. So as we continue to get you closer and closer to the start of the NFL season, I think we talked enough about Davis Mills today, huh? It's been the greater part of two segments. C.J. Stroud did not play last night. Well, C.J. Stroud, one of the best quarterbacks in the game. It's time for a Deep Steel Blue Pill.
Little blue pills can take 30 minutes to get you ready for excitement.
So that's why we're giving you a big, deep, steel blue pill.
You take the blue pill, believe whatever you want.
Get it up for the Texans and take this deep, steel blue pill.
And by the way, she'll like it too.
Texans Swarm! Okay. Wow, that echoed. No one's looking at me. That makes me feel good. There's an echo here. It's the Energy Center, baby. It's a big old building, a hangar, if you will. So, C.J. Stroud has been discussed by just about every single NFL analyst under the sun. This is ESPN's television show, Get Up, talking about number 7.
Boy, you bring up C.J. Stroud. There were 6 quarterbacks taken in the first round this year.
Yep.
Caleb Williams at the top of the list, number 1 overall. Whether they like it or not, every quarterback now entering the league is going to be measured up against C.J. Stroud because of how he played last year, better than any other quarterback rookie ever had. And now all these guys, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, if and when he gets called upon, any of these guys are going to be measured against a guy who set the standard last year. He elevated the bar for rookie quarterbacks. Right. Expectations for first-round draft picks at rookie quarterback already are high. He made them higher. And when they struggle, and inevitably some of these guys will struggle, it's going to make it all the more challenging because of the success that C.J. Stroud had last year.
Stroud is the standard, and that's per Adam Schefter, who does get hyperbolistic from time to time. I once got blocked for calling him out for being hyperbolistic.
Did you?
And then I got unblocked later.
I would say, how did you get unblocked?
I don't know. I think John McClain might have gone to bat for me. I truly don't know. I remember I was for a little bit because I called him a hyperbolistic douche canoe. I mean, I was a stupid idiot. This was a moment in time where I was so, like, militantly Patriots fan. I'm a lot more mellow now that I've lived here for a while. But I think they were talking about Aaron Rodgers and the year he was having in 2012. And they were saying, we've never seen anything like this before. And I was like, 2007 with Tom Brady. That was what I was thinking. I called him a hyperbolistic douche.
Okay.
And he blocked me.
I hear where he's coming from.
Understandably so.
But he's being a this is what you're just saying. Like, this is a big-time hyperbole from him. I guess if that's what we're going to talk about, rookie quarterbacks, like we can. I think that's crazy to try to hold people, quarterbacks, to the standard of C.J. Stroud. That seems like a bad idea. Then everyone's going to be a failure. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no way we should be doing this. I don't remember. I was in, Andrew Luck's rookie year. I was in college, so I don't know what like the sports radio scene was like, you know, in 2013 and beyond. But I don't feel like we compare people to Andrew Luck until last year, like holding rookie quarterbacks to that standard, because it kind of feels absurd. You're going to ask a quarterback to have like a 4-1 touchdown to interception ratio and lead their team to a playoff victory in their first year? Good luck. Like, maybe Caleb Williams, you can hold him to that standard this year if you want. I wouldn't be holding Drake May or J.J. McCarthy to that standard. That's just not fair.
No, it's not.
That's not fair at all.
It's not. It's unfair to hold anyone to that standard. Caleb Williams, though?
Maybe. Maybe.
Didn't even play last night.
But his team is... His weapons are so good.
Joe's Bears won their Super Bowl last night. They beat the future Super Bowl champions in the preseason opener. So congratulations.
4-0 preseason. Here we go. You know, back on track. Make sure, you know, stadium's filled week one for maybe no DeAndre Hopkins and the Tennessee Titans.
And did you see Caleb Williams? He told all of his teammates that they got to pick up after themselves in the locker room.
Yeah.
Just like Anthony Richardson did, like had everyone pick up after the NFL Combine. Joe, why are you looking so dismayed by this?
It's really
a reflection of your character. I'm bringing up something good that Caleb Williams did, and here you are being like,
This isn't an anti-Caleb thing. This is like, be a grown-ass man and clean up your stuff without someone having to tell you things.
Oh, this is for everybody else.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, like, what are we doing? Like, just like littering everywhere? Come on, guys. Be better than that. But good for Caleb. Good for Caleb standing up to his team.
Yeah. Have you ever littered? I feel guilty if I don't throw something in the trash can.
I have littered.
You have? Oh, don't mess with Texas, Joe.
But.
You messed with Texas.
I also don't know if I did. Yeah, I probably was in Texas.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
But I probably had. I think I had good reason.
No, you didn't. You littered in Texas. You should have littered in Illinois.
I think I had good reason.
What was the good reason?
I was not driving the car.
Okay.
But I might have, may not have got sick in a car.
Oh, you should have yacked a little bit.
Yeah, and like in a bag and threw out the window.
Oh, that's natural waste.
I threw it out of the window. The car
was it a plastic
yak?
That's gross. Did it hit a car behind
you? No, we like slowed down to the highway.
You're on
like,
the highway. I doubt that you slowed down on the highway to do that. No, that was probably like, going full speed.
I'm just whoop.
And just there's this little plastic bag with puke in it, and it just goes to the car behind you, just smashes on the wall and sticks there. And the person,
you know, I wasn't gonna go that graphic. You're just grossing a lot of people out.
I'm turning it into a story now. And again, as always, I'm embellishing the details. But here's what probably happened. And Joe's. This is why Joe feels guilty about it. So what happened was this bag probably hit like a minivan.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was like a family of six in there, right? Like it's three rows back.
Just missed the motorcycle.
And it hits this van, and the van starts like going back and forth, and the wife who's in the passenger seat, she's like, honey, this is just like the time you forgot about my anniversary. Why can't you drive? And the husband tells her, shut up, bitch. And they and then all of a sudden the van just like rolls over on its side, and you were luckily far away enough, because then
gone.
30 seconds later, this car it spontaneously combusted because of you throwing your bag of puke.
Yep.
Theoretically.
Yep.
I may have fudged some details there.
No, maybe just a little bit. Maybe just a tiny little bit of fudging.
By the way, CJ Stroud is not a top 10 quarterback in Madden.
Whatever. Madden's stupid.
Number 10, Kirk Cousins, 84 overall. Number 9, Brock Purdy, 85 overall. Okay, that's high. I bet that Purdy has a very high awareness rating, which is why he's ranked that high. Jalen Hurts is 86. Justin Herbert, 87. Tua's 88. Get the hell out of here.
That's my problem with
Tua
that.
Tua should be lower than Kirk Cousins. Dak is 90. Josh Allen, 92. Joe Burrow, 93. Lamar Jackson, 98. What is he in the playoffs? 86?
Ooh.
Patrick Mahomes, 99.
I think there's too much Tua love happening. That contract is going to age poorly, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where the Tua love is coming from. Like, who is a champion for Tua nationally? I don't think there really is one.
But like, he ends up he's highly ranked on the top 100, the players 100.
Yeah, he was.
He's a top five quarterback in Madden. He just got the second highest second highest paid quarterback in the NFL. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have done any of those things.
Nor would I. He is Joe George. I'm Paul Gallant. We're at the Hunters Extravaganza at NRG Center, presented by the Texas Trophy Hunters Association. Coming up next, we get you closer and closer to the start of the NFL season. We are Earl Campbell days away. You're going to hear an all-time Earl Campbell highlight featuring two voices that Joe has to guess and you have to guess too. Gallant and George, stay put.
ESPN 97.5.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Catch!
The countdown to the NFL season continues with Paul Gallant and Joe George.
34 days away from the start of the NFL season. The most Houston number there is. Hakeem Olajuwon, Nolan Ryan, and of course, the Tyler Rose himself, Earl Campbell. This is a call of Earl Campbell's infamous run against the then Los Angeles Rams, where Earl Campbell's jersey disintegrates as he runs over countless Los Angeles football players.
Libs.
Fourth quarter, 10-3 Los Angeles, and here goes Earl Campbell. He knocks Robertson on his back.
Touchdown. Beautiful.
Five. Oh, what a runner. They're going wild in Houston. Oh. Everybody's happy.
I'm going wild
Robertson.
Up here.
Beautiful running.
He ran over Robertson.
Tremendous.
The Rams are still thinking that they are playing Tony Dorsett.
Boy, did he hit Robertson.
Earl Campbell is strong.
Ran
and he
over
will
Isaiah.
Put his shoulders into your chest.
First and goal on the Rams 6. Oh. And this crowd is noisy now. Hey, Johnson.
There comes Campbell back in.
Earl Campbell had to put on another shirt.
Sledgehammer running.
First off, Joe George, can you guess who was the play-by-play of that call?
Oh, no.
Vin Scully.
Oh. That makes sense.
That was Vin Scully.
Okay.
Can you guess who was the color commentator on that call?
It's not John Madden, right?
No, it's definitely not John Madden.
I have no idea.
Syracuse legend, Jim Brown.
Oh.
Who just takes a random drive-by on Dallas Cowboys running back Tony Dorsett along the way. They're not tackling Tony Dorsett. They didn't know how strong Earl Campbell was.
He must have beef with Tony.
I'm guessing, yeah.
Like, because, like, that seems pretty. Or maybe they played the week before, and they shut down Tony Dorsett pretty well. That's a pretty direct shot.
It really
Tony
is.
It's pretty great, though.
Earl Campbell played for the Oilers from 1978 to 84. For the Saints, 84 to 85. He was the NFL MVP in 1979. The Offensive Player of the Year 3 years in a row, 78, 79, and 1980 for the Love You Blue Oilers. The Offensive Rookie of the Year in 78. Three-time first-team All-Pro from 78 to 1980, a five-time Pro Bowler, three-time NFL rushing yard leader, two-time NFL touchdown leader on the 1970s All-Decade team, the NFL 100th anniversary all-time team, and he has his number retired by the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, I hate that. It should be retired at NRG.
Too.
They've got to find a way to honor him some way. The stats that he has are incredible. Like, the fact he won Offensive Player of the Year 3 years in a row, but his first three seasons in the NFL, like, short career, but incredible in it. I mean, if he just could have had some longevity, he would have been the leading rusher by far.
Also won the Heisman in 1977 while playing at Texas. His number 20 is retired by Texas. So there you go, 34 days away from the start of the NFL season. Justin Herbert, Paul Gallant, what's the difference? Justin Herbert, plantar fascia injury. Paul Gallant, plantar fasciitis that requires him to wear inserts.
Oh, I didn't know that, Paul.
Yeah, it's not fun.
Oh.
It's not fun. I had a stretch like a couple of years ago where I was walking around, and it was just complete pain in my heel, and I was wondering what the hell it was. I even, because I couldn't figure out the pain, went to a podiatrist, and the podiatrist gave me an injection before a flag football game. I'm not kidding.
Like, in your foot?
Yeah.
I hate needles, so that would freak me out.
It didn't hurt that bad.
Okay, I looking at needles bothers me.
It helped me for that game. I couldn't believe he was giving me a needle for it. He was a really cool guy. I liked him a lot.
He's shooting you up for a flag
I wish that was at the time where I was unemployed, so I wish at that moment in time that I could have said, I got shot up for playing flag football game. But Herbert will spend 2 weeks in a walking boot. Should be okay by week one. Chargers going to Chargers. They just have the worst luck.
Yeah, they do. It doesn't matter if Harbaugh's the coach. They have unfortunate injuries at all times. Mm-hmm. It's just who they are. I don't know if it matters who their coach is. Like, at this point, we talked about him not too long ago. I think he is going to be like the next Matt Stafford, where he's going to do nothing. And L.A., and then eventually he'll go somewhere else and win a Super Bowl. But I would have little faith that he's going to do anything with the Chargers.
Man. He does have a ton of ability. It jumps out on tape. He's tough, too. But, yeah, the Brandon Staley era wasted him.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, who was the head coach of the Chargers? Oh, shoot, I'm forgetting his name.
Ken Wisenhunt? That's, or
no,
that.
No, that was way back in the day. Man, he was a defensive-minded coach, but he also...
Oh, Anthony Lynn.
Anthony Lynn, that was it. Yeah, the defense wasn't good with him. So we'll see what happens with Jim Harbaugh. DeAndre Hopkins, Titans wide receiver. He's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks with a knee strain for Tennessee. So, I don't know. I don't know if Jeffrey Simmons is going to get mad at anybody, lash out irrationally over that, but the offense definitely takes a bit of a step back. And then Texas wide receiver, now Chiefs wide receiver, Xavier Worthy. Did you see this video? Xavier Worthy is getting jammed at the line of scrimmage. He gets jammed by a cornerback a good 10 yards inside, where he is then pancaked by some random linebacker in the middle of the field.
He's got to put some muscle on. He'll be okay.
He's got to add some weight. But then he won't be the super fastest guy of all time like he was at the NFL Combine that one time.
Yeah, they got to put him in motion if this is what's going to be like him getting off the line in man coverage. Because this is a bad, bad look.
Yeah, go online and look it up. I'm happy to see it because, yeah, everyone has been saying, like, oh, the Chiefs just got the fastest wide receiver in the NFL. And that means that this is going to make a three-peat as possible. And yeah. I don't like that kind of thing.
Rashee Rice, still not suspended by the NFL. On a side note.
that is also surprising. I wonder how long he actually gets suspended for. If he does get suspended, did you see yesterday that Tristan Wirfs got paid by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? The contract that he made, $140.63 million, drew a smirk emoji from Texans left tackle Laremy Tunsil, who has yet to show up to practice to this point in camp.
Yeah, and also it gave a lot of people... clearly, they're not watching Laremy Tunsil sign his contracts because Laramie's going to cash in now again because he keeps signing these short deals. Like, and he's just Laremy Tunsil. He's great as his own agent. Like, I give him credit. Like, it's worked out so well for him. Mm-hmm. He's going to get another fat contract before he retires.
More importantly, an incredible selection of Hawaiian shirts, and I want that one Hawaiian shirt that he wore that one time. Probably cost like more than my condo, but whatever. I don't care. And the NFL is going to test optical tracking to measure first downs in the preseason. I don't know if we saw that last night.
I don't think we did, but they're going to get rid of the chain gang.
I don't like that. I like the chain gang. It adds a little drama.
Yeah, when they run out on the field and
measure
it. Like...
Yeah, yeah. I feel like it's going to be really difficult for them to actually measure where the football is when a guy's knee goes down with this optical tracking. There's no way, unless there's some sort of like, stop jerk motion or something like that that makes it seem like the football has stopped moving. There's no way to determine like where the football is relative, like the edge of the football, how far the football is being extended. I don't think there's right now a way to actually do this. So I'm not a fan of it. Also, and I don't like change.
Do we need it? Like, was anyone asking for this?
Maybe.
Like, I don't know. Like, this isn't something I can... They got to get rid of the chain gang. Like, that's going to make everything so much better in the NFL. Just not something I had in mind.
Chain gang does, perhaps, in 2024, sound offensive.
So maybe just change the name, though.
From chain gang, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, chain gang makes them sound like they're prisoners. Can't have prisoners running the NFL. Come on. He is Joe George. I am Paul Gallant. It is Gallant and George. We are live at the Hunters Extravaganza presented by Texas Trophy Hunters Association. And by the way, we have a giveaway. We have a giveaway that we got to get to you guys. You ready for this? You ready for this? Well, it's coming up at the end of the next segment, so stick around. Gallant and George, post Malone tickets in the next segment. Stay put.
ESPN 97.5. To the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at NRG Center for the 2024 Texas Trophy Hunters Extravaganza with Paul Gallant and Joe George.
And joining us right now is a very special guest on the HR&P guest line with year 21 of Houston Restaurant Week underway. Katie Stone, the president of the Cleverly Stone Foundation and of Houston Restaurant Week, is joining us. First off, Katie, it's great to have you with us. Your mom was awesome. I worked with her a couple of times way back in the day. It's really cool to see you carrying on her legacy, and so sorry for your loss.
Oh, thanks, guys. Yeah, we really appreciate all the support and the help, and it's certainly an incredible legacy. I think what's so fascinating is, it shows the power of what one person can do.
Katie, so you guys are in, year 21 now. You got over 400 restaurants you guys can choose from. Can you walk our listeners through just, how it works? Obviously, they can on the website find the restaurants, but if they choose to eat from the, the pre-selected menu, what kind of happens after that with the Houston Food Bank and everything?
Absolutely, yep. So this is actually the food bank's largest annual fundraiser. It's pretty amazing. This is the biggest check they get every year. Over 400 restaurants this year participating, dining out and doing good and supporting our community. Diners can simply go to the website, HoustonRestaurantWeek.com, where all 400, I think there's maybe 410 or so now, menus. And there's brunch, lunch, and dinner, and each one of those carries a donation that is built into the price. So diners are never solicited for donations. And then the restaurant simply makes a donation based on how many HRW meals that they sell. And at the end of the month, it turned out to be a pretty big number for the food bank, which is pretty amazing.
Katie Stone, the president of the Cleverly Stone Foundation and Houston Restaurant Week, with us. How do you figure out what restaurants are participating in it? It does seem like almost the entirety of restaurants in Houston are in some way, shape, or form. Is there like a database that somebody can go and find the many contributors?
That's a great question. Houston Restaurant Week has been around for 21 years, and so many of the city's restaurants and operators and chefs know about the program, and many of them have participated in some way, whether it's their own restaurant or they're working with another group. And a lot of times it is word of mouth. A lot of times it's maybe a chef participated at one restaurant and now they have a new job at another restaurant, and they remember how positive an experience it was, how incredible it is for the staff to be, number one, to be busy in August, because that's not something that's happening anywhere else in the country. August is the slowest month of the year nationwide for the hospitality industry. However, here in Houston, for the majority of the participants, it's actually their busiest month of the year. So that's a pretty strong driver for restaurants to get involved, because the HRW platform is totally free for restaurants, and it's just a wonderful platform for restaurants to be able to share the diversity in their cuisine, the diversity in their dishes, and just to have a lot of new eyes. That was always one of my mother's biggest and important pillars that she held to, is, Houston is such a wonderfully international cuisine and so many different kinds, and introducing all of those different cuisines to folks. And at a bargain, at a reasonable price, so that they can get out there often, was really one of the big, things that inspired her to start the event. And, it started as 1 week, and then it eventually grew to 5 weeks. And now it's just a whole month of stretchy pants season. You can't feel bad about that, though.
Yeah, Katie, we have a lot. We have people we work with. Highway Cantina is one.
Highway Cantina.
We do a lot of shows there. My wife's restaurant, Zimiti's, is now part of it. They have been for a couple of years. And I know that, she and her dad love being part of Houston Restaurant Week. But, from our side of it, it's like my first thing. I go to the restaurants. I go to the website. I see all the restaurants that are involved. I got to ask, like, as someone that's been part of this, like, how many of these restaurants are you trying to hit in a month? Because there's, you said 410, like, how many of these do you go through? What's your process? Like, are you specifically choosing certain restaurants every year? Like, how do you handle Houston Restaurant Week?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it has to do with the price point. So Houston Restaurant Week has $25, $39, and $55 price points. And so in order for the HRW meals to be considered a great dining deal, which you probably heard, my mother cleverly, repeat many times on the air over the years, it does need to be a good deal for the diners. And so, for example, many of the, you know, high PPA, high per person average steakhouses and restaurants out there that are participating at the $55 price point, a la carte, those meals are actually closer to $85, meaning if you would visit the restaurant outside of Houston Restaurant Week, you would actually be paying $85 for that meal. And so a lot of time and due diligence goes into evaluating these menus and helping the restaurants to create the most valuable menu that they can, because at the end of the day, that is what is going to bring diners through the door in the numbers that they want. And that's a good thing, because the food bank ends up benefiting and getting a huge check. But certainly, you know, we want to make sure that the restaurants are providing a good deal for the diners. We want to make sure that the restaurants are all in on the mission. You know, this is a really important part of it. Supporting the food bank is and was my mother's, you know, life's work. It was her mission, and now it is mine. And I take it very seriously. I take it very personally. And so it's important that the restaurants also understand, you know, what that means to the city and the community. And they love it. You know, it gives them a chance to connect to their community in a way that they haven't been able to do before. And when they see those meals being sold, understanding that the Houston Food Bank turns every dollar donated into three meals, that's pretty big. You know, that's a big deal. So we're going on over 63 million meals for food insecure Houstonians, and we're not planning on stopping anytime soon.
Well, that is really awesome. Katie Stone, the president of the Cleverly Stone Foundation and Houston Restaurant Week. It's year 21 of Houston Restaurant Week. As you heard from Katie, it's stretchy pants season. You get cheap food. It's all for a great cause. Thank you so much, Katie, and enjoy your stretchy pants. I know I'm going to the next couple of weeks.
Thanks so much, guys. Yeah, I better see y'all out there with some stretchy pants and some HRW visits. And shout out to Highway Cantina and Demetis.
Yes.
We're very appreciative for them coming on board. I think Demetis has done it in the past. But, yeah, we love meeting new restaurants, and we love bringing new restaurants into the mix. And I think that they're going to love it as well. So
I'm glad you're shouting them out. Highway Cantina is my favorite place, truly. Truly, I am not bought and paid for. I love it. just naturally. Katie, thank you so much, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.
You as well. It is Golan and George. We are at the Hunter's Extravaganza at NRG Center, and guess what? We're going to give you something extra, not just all that you need to know about Houston Restaurants Week post Malone. Oh, yeah. Caller number three to 713-780-3776. You win a pair of tickets to see Post Malone for the F1 Trillion Tour at the Cynthia Woods Mitchell Pavilion on Tuesday, October 22nd. Tickets go on sale today at LiveNation.com. Caller number three again to 713-780-3776. It is Golan and George. Andre Johnson's in the Hall of Fame tomorrow. You say Kikuchi. You say on the hill for the Astros tonight. You want to talk about any of that? Stick around on G&G.
ESPN 97.5.